Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH and 96.5 TIC. Our guest is U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary David Obazinski. He's going to be joining us this week to talk about summer safety. It's an important topic, particularly when it comes to the water. Dave, good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Morgan. Appreciate the time.
And it is such an important topic because the weather is getting nicer, lots of sunshine, lots of opportunity to get in the water and enjoy some fun in the sun. But we've got to do it responsibly, and that's, I think, going to be the focus of our message today. This is an issue that's near and dear to you. I could tell just by the way you reached out to me. Why is it such a significant issue for you? Let's start there.
Well, I've been involved with the Coast Guard Auxiliary for almost 15 years now, and one of my responsibilities is that of being a program visitor flotilla service officer, which means that I go around and I talk to the boat dealers, the retailers, the marinas, and I make sure that they're fully stocked with boating safety information so that they can distribute that information to the boaters who are regularly coming into their establishments or in their marinas. Make sure they have all the navigation information, boating safety regulations, et cetera, and the reminders of boating as safely as possible. And, you know, we try our best to get the information out there, but we still unfortunately have accidents and incidents that happen on the water in Connecticut. We're doing our best to try to prevent those things from happening. And that also helps the Coast Guard in reducing the number of search and rescue missions that they have to go on. And we have limited resources. So we want to keep people safe and be ready to help them when we need to.
Of those accidents, Dave, about how many of them would you say are, I don't know if easily preventable is the right word, but just preventable overall in that if you're not drinking and boating, you're more than likely to remain safe or keep others in other boats that you may come across safe. Is that perhaps the number one problem that you guys come across, or are there other issues?
Yeah, there are a couple of issues that we like to remind people about so that we could try to prevent these accidents from happening. First and foremost is the fact that upwards of 80% of fatal drowning victims nationwide were not wearing a personal flotation device. And that's just a huge statistic. The other problems we have is operator education. The vast majority of fatal accidents happen on boats where the operator has not completed a state-approved boating safety course. And then, as you pointed out, there are other contributing factors, which include operator inattention, excessive speed, and alcohol use, which all contribute to being top contributing factors in both minor incidents and fatal crashes. The number of registered vessels in Connecticut has dropped a little bit since its high in 2021 when we had 93,000 vessels registered, and we're now at about 88,000 in Connecticut. And when the gas prices go up, we also see a little bit of a decrease on the water because of the cost involved. But there are some very simple things people can do to try to be safer on the water. And that's what we're out trying to remind people about.
Let's talk about that boater safety course, which you mentioned. We'll start there and go through some of the other topics that you mentioned. What's involved in that particular course, Dave?
So in order for somebody to receive their boating certificate in the state of Connecticut, They need to take a boating class, which is now a combination class for boating, personal watercraft, and a water ski endorsement. It's an 8-hour course, and it can range between being one long 8-hour day and then a test at the end, or 2 4-hour sessions, depending on how it's being given. And so these classes are given throughout the year in different places by different organizations, and they're very accessible on the Coast Guard Auxiliary's website, as well as through the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection here in the state of Connecticut. So it's important that owners and operators of these vessels get their boating certificate. And everybody who runs through the class, I've done it myself, come out of it going, wow, I didn't know all of that. Or I thought I knew about how to navigate, but I didn't realize all of those things that were involved. So it's important for people to get that kind of education. I'll also mention that if you go to the Coast Guard Auxiliary's website and you click on take a boating safety class, there are also a number of other types of classes you can take once you have your operator certificate, which include navigation. There's another course called Suddenly in Command. So if, say, you're a spouse of somebody who normally operates a boat and something happens to that boat operator, maybe they have a medical incident on the boat while you're out and about, you can safely take over and steer that boat so that you can get that person to safety. And so there are a number of courses people should check out.
As far as boater attentiveness, something that I believe was the term you used just a moment ago, what is involved in that? Obviously, you don't want to be impaired, but there's, I'm sure, more to it. Is it not using cell phones, similar to distracted driving, only in this case, where you're operating a boat? You know, nighttime navigation on a boat is obviously much harder to do. So as far as the boater itself and the person who's boating and their attention level, where does it need to be? Could you comment a little bit on that?
Sure. That's an important topic because when you're out on a vessel on the water, you're also dealing with the elements. You're in the sun. Your body is being, going through the sun, the heat, the wind, sometimes the glare on the water. It's hard to see other vessels. It's hard to see paddle craft that are out there also, or sailboats. So it's really important to be attentive, put the phone down, not be too distracted by the other people who are on your vessel, and really pay attention to operating that vessel in a safe manner. There's all kinds of factors, whether it be dehydration, and once again, vision and glare, weather that suddenly changes on the water, all kinds of factors that you normally wouldn't have to deal with, say, while you're in a car, where you also need to be attentive, but in other ways. So being on the water, there's a lot more going on around you that you really need to be aware of.
What about physical requirements or check-ins? I'm thinking about, for instance, pilots have to go through annual testing. They have to kind of swear, if you will, that if they're not feeling well or impaired, they need to be honest and not get behind the controls of an airplane. Are there any restrictions like that for boaters, or is it less regulated in that sense?
Yeah, I'm not too aware of anything that would disqualify someone, other than we rely on the operators to make sure that they're in good condition in order to operate their vessel safely. I would always recommend that there be more than one person on board who is qualified and can assist in operating that vessel in case something does happen. But in Connecticut right now, I'm not aware of any recertification that needs to take place with the current regulations. There have been some changing rules about younger people and personal watercraft and making sure that they also receive a certificate in personal watercraft operation. And there are also rules about life jackets that anyone who is under 13 years old on any vessel that is underway, unless the child is below deck or in an enclosed cabin, those life jackets must be worn by anyone under 13 years old. So there are things like that, but nothing about recertification that I'm aware of.
David Obedzinski, U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, is with us on our Face Connecticut program this week, talking about summer safety, particularly boating and water safety. We hear from time to time about the DEEP, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, out on its waterways, perhaps at state parks or beaches, and they're out patrolling and they're out checking to make sure that people who are on boats are safe to be boating and on the water. Would you say that your effort, in particular Operation Dry Water, is it kind of a similar effort to that?
Yes. Operation Dry Water is a nationwide effort that takes place annually between July 3rd and July 5th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, where all of the resources that are out there, local law enforcement, Connecticut resources through the state, Coast Guard, as well as the Coast Guard Auxiliary, which is the volunteer arm of the U.S. Coast Guard, are all out with the idea of increasing our visibility to be the eyes and the ears on the water, to encourage people to boat safely, to be out there to answer any questions. The Coast Guard itself is doing boat inspections from time to time, checking people who may not have the current decal on their boat, showing a recent inspection. So we're out there during Operation Dry Water to just enhance and heighten the awareness of boating safely, and through programs like this, through things that we print in the media, and through our presence on the water with Coast Guard auxiliarists who are using their own vessels and getting out there and talking to the boaters wherever we can.
I want to go back to something you brought up a few minutes ago, and that is the life jacket and how people need to wear them. I mean, the statistic here is pretty grim. 87% of people who drowned in a recreational boating incident were not wearing a life jacket. And yet, whenever I'm out on the water, or which isn't often, or when I'm at the shore and I'm looking at people who are out on the water, I don't see a ton of people wearing them. They might be nearby, but they're not on.
Right. And
hey guys, it's Daxton
and Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing,
which of course we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
And it is a requirement in Connecticut that there be a Coast Guard approved life jacket or personal flotation device on board for every person who is on board, although the regulation does not require everyone over the age of 13 to have to wear it while they're on board. You know, I see boaters out there where maybe, you know, they might have six people on board and two of them are wearing a personal flotation device, but the other four are not. So that happens. Some people just don't like the way it feels. There are now such a wide variety of approved Coast Guard approved personal flotation devices out there that, in my opinion, you will find something that is comfortable for you to wear and enjoy your time on the water. So I highly encourage people to do that. And all you have to do is look at the inside of that personal flotation device, and you'll see the Coast Guard approved language and symbol in there, and know that that is an approved life jacket for somebody to use. So it's important. And I'll also say, too, that those individuals who are on paddle craft really need to make sure that they're wearing their personal flotation device. And that helps with people to be seen on the water, too, because often the flotation devices are brighter in color. And many of those kayaks and paddle boards now are the color of blue and green, and they blend in too much with the water around it. And it's harder for those motorized vessels to actually see you from a distance. So having the personal flotation device is not only for your own safety in the water and help you in case you land in the water, but also can help visually make you more visible to other vessels.
Could we talk about the issue of speeding in motorboats? That is, boats obviously going too fast, and they may lose control whether they hit some land or rocks or other boats, but it can obviously lead to various kinds of accidents. Is that a problem that you're looking for, speeding in a boat?
Yes, and most of the local law enforcement on the waterways are watching for that very closely. There are no wake zones that are clearly marked with navigational devices on the water. A number of people don't pay attention to that, unfortunately, and there's lots of good reasons for no wake zones where you're supposed to be slowing down. There might be environmental issues, sensitive areas. There might be docks and other vessels in the area that the waves will damage those docks and those vessels if you go too fast. There's lots of reasons for it. And then, as you said, safety on the water, and keeping in mind that there are all different sizes of vessels on the water, from small paddle craft all the way up to the larger vessels. It's everyone's responsibility on the water to watch out for each other and to make sure we all have a good, safe time on the water and enjoy our time without injury.
One of the worst stories in recent years in Connecticut was a story that came out of Old Saybrook a few years ago on Labor Day. You may remember it was late at night and a boat was coming in too fast. The operators were found to have been under the influence and they crashed into a rock jetty. 3 of 6 people on that boat were killed in that particular boat wreck. And I just bring this up, Dave, because I remember the impact that story had, not just on people in the boating community and people at the shoreline, but just the whole community at large was heartbroken by that tragedy. And in many cases, these incidents transcend beyond just those who are involved, but impact many, many people. And I think that's something important to stress.
Absolutely. It is very sad when that happens. Many of these types of incidents are avoidable with preparation, with knowing the water, knowing where the obstacles are in the water, having up-to-date charts on the waterways, knowing the tides and the tide schedule in that particular area. I mean, in Connecticut, between 2018 and 2025, we've had 359 reportable recreational boating incidents. And what that means is a reportable recreational incident is one in which somebody was injured and needed medical attention, or there was a fatality involved, or more than $500 in property damage. And in those cases, there were 45 fatalities, of which almost 30% had alcohol as a contributing factor. So these things are avoidable, and we just need people to pay a little bit more attention, put a little bit more thought into what they're doing, and avoid alcohol and other contributing factors that could cause an accident on the water.
I know that at this point in time, we're talking about the nice, warm, and sunny summer months, and the days are long, and people want to get outside. They want to get into the water. It can be refreshing for some. And boating, of course, people do find it to be fun. But I want to ask you, David, being a U.S. Coast Guard auxiliary, is this something that you're pursuing year-round, or is this an effort that you're focusing on primarily in these summer months?
So the auxiliarists, and there's 21,000 of them across the country who operate in all different states where water sports take place and we're trying to improve water safety. Each area is, you know, has its own seasons. If you're in Florida, you're boating all year round. Up here in Connecticut, we are concentrating in the winter months on boating education, getting people into the classes, getting their certificates, preparing for the new season, you know, working on first aid and those kinds of things, as well as getting our own members qualified in different areas so that they can go out on appropriate missions to reinforce and be a force multiplier to the Coast Guard stations that are here in Connecticut, in New London and New Haven. So we are constantly working on all kinds of projects so that when we get to those summer boating months, we're ready to go. We're out there, we're talking to the marinas, we're talking to the boaters, and giving them everything they need so that they can be as safe as possible.
And David, is there anything else that you want people to know about this campaign? Perhaps maybe there are more resources that people can research online, or as you're saying, if they're not ready this summer, maybe in the winter they could prepare to take a class. Where can people learn more about this?
If anyone just Googles Operation Drywater, they'll get the page all about this nationwide effort. But for resources to learn more about either boating safely or looking at the auxiliary as a place where somebody might want to volunteer and get involved with the Coast Guard and help them in this recreational boating safety effort. The website is cgaux.org, coastguardauxiliary.org, cgaux.org. And from there, you can click on Take a Boating Safety Class, learn about additional boating safety education, or learn more about the auxiliary itself.
And David, I wanted to ask you also, while it just came to me, much of the conversation we talked about being under the influence of presumably alcohol, this relates though to drugs, correct? This includes perhaps more traditional drugs that people might think of?
Yes. In Connecticut, both alcohol, marijuana, and other drugs can impair your ability to operate safely on the water. And the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection puts out a boater's guide with rules and resources every year. You should be able to find it where you buy your boats or at the marinas. Or you can go online to the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection's website and download a digital copy of it. And in that, you will find information about boating under the influence. Here in Connecticut, a new law was passed that's now in effect that now requires reciprocal operating suspensions for individuals convicted of driving under the influence or boating under the influence. And this means a suspension in one realm no longer exists in isolation, and a person who loses their driver's license for DUI will also lose their privilege to operate a boat and vice versa. So the law in Connecticut is pretty strict, and there are what we call drug recognition experts in our law enforcement area, and they are trained to be able to test voters in the event that they are suspected of driving or operating under the influence. And that includes marijuana use on the water also.
David Obazinski, I'm really appreciative of your time, a U.S. Coast Guard auxiliarist who's joined us to talk about summer safety, particularly water and boating safety. I appreciate your time very much on what is an important summertime issue for sure.
Thank you, Morgan. Really appreciate it.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.